here on Back on the Field on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop shop where sports meets life. It's been a while. I've been on the road. The man has been patient as I've been gone for a month. Rob Drummond back with us here from the NFL, CFL, and Syracuse. Rob, how are you?
Pretty good. How's it going, Dan?
Good. I'm happy to be here. Happy to sleep in my own bed for more than one night. And you know, you and I have a lot to talk about because a lot has happened. A lot is going to happen relatively soon. And first and foremost, getting off the field and going on the court like we did before. You watched the games. You saw how Syracuse got through. Looking at your bracket, did you fill out a bracket?
I filled out a bracket. Yes.
Okay, what was your bracket? Who were your final four?
My final four teams were Louisville, Wisconsin. I had Indiana and I had Kansas. You know, so I usually have my Syracuse team going in there, but you know, after the way they played that last half against Louisville in the Big East Championship. I just wasn't comfortable at how they were playing. I'm glad they surprised me. I was happy they actually beat Indiana to squash their bracket, so that they are my team. I did two brackets. I do one bracket with my heart, and I do one bracket with my head. The bracket with my heart has Syracuse winning it all. The bracket with my head had, you know, how it panned out. Winning our house pool bracket, believe it or not.
Hey, you did.
You know, but there were so many upsets. It was fun to watch. It was a great tournament. You know, Syracuse, you know, they played great. You know, up until the point where they went up against Michigan and just couldn't score. You know, they outplayed Michigan. If you think about it, you sit back there and look at the game. They really, really outplayed Michigan, but they just, for some reason, just could not score that game. You know, it was frustrating to watch, but I always bleed orange, you know, and we'll get them next year.
Defensively, this is a team that kept teams down 39 points, 50 points. Michigan, who's a high scoring 79, 80, 83, whatever it may be, this is a high-octane, high-offense, high-scoring team. You saw it in the championship game. Syracuse holds them to 61. They lose the game, but still a victory in a sense because you're holding a team around 20 points below their average. So I think when you talk about outplaying, it's leveling more on the side. I'm thinking of the defense in your statement that Syracuse's defense really outplayed everybody. And outplayed Michigan. I think the offense is the only thing that had the issue. But as far as the tournament, I think it's safe to say that there was no defense that outplayed Syracuse.
No, there was no defense that outplayed Syracuse in the entire tournament. You know, their defense is suffocating. You know, it's just it's hard to find a shot. Those guys are very athletic, very long, you know, and very agile. You know, but their problem was they just, out of all the people out there, they just needed one person just to score a few points. Score 10 points. They score 10 points. Someone scores 10 points, you know, whether it's be CJ, you know, whether it be James Sutherland, you know, whether it be Brandon, you know, Michael Carter Williams, you know, anyone, you know, someone just had to have any kind of offense that game. I mean, my frustration was with C.J. Fair had a mismatch the entire game, and we saw that early. You know, I always say in sports, it's like, you know, if something's working, stay with it. And early on, he was hot. You know, ride him until you can't ride him anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and it frustrated me at some point. You know, the whole offense should have been generated to go towards C.J. Fair because he was the only one at that point who was scoring points. And right now, the defense is playing great. Go to someone who's scoring points. Go to someone who has a mismatch against his opponent, and that was C.J. Fair. And it just frustrated me that we didn't exploit the opportunity when we had a chance to.
And that's something that was an issue for Syracuse going down the stretch in the games that they lost and in the 4 out of 5 that they lost. Something that I've been thinking all the way through, get the ball to C.J. Fair.
Right.
Your best shooter. Not going to give you a bad shot. If he misses, it's going to hit the rim. Mm-hmm. It's going to roll around for a while. It's going to get close. C.J. Fair is not your air ball type guy. He's not your erratic shot. He's a guy who has worked on his jump shot, good from three, good from inside. And he's also someone, not just jump shooting, but he knows if you're down,
yes,
the only guy who consistently took the ball and said, I'm going to the basket, I'm going to make you foul me, maybe I'll make the shot, I'm going to try to make the
yes
shot, but I'm going to make you foul me. So a guy who knows to get fouls, who has that basketball IQ, who will go inside, attack the rim, get fouled, good on jump shots. What boggles my mind is that when you need someone to change the game, your game changer doesn't get the ball.
Correct. And it was frustrating to watch. I mean, C.J. Fair has every intangible you just mentioned. You know, he's great from the outside. He can beat you off the dribble. You know, he's good at driving to the rim. You know, he's a good low post player. He's a good high post player. You know, he's a good perimeter player. You know, the only knock I would really have on him if I looked at him going forward, and I would tell him also, is that, you know, you consistently go to your left. You know, and everyone knows that. You know, so if I'm a coach, I'm like, you know, play him strong to his left. And for, I mean, granted, he's left-handed, but play him strong to his left and force him to go to his right. You know, that's the only knock I have on him going forward if he decides to go to the NBA or if he stays back at Syracuse. He needs to work in his game a lot more, going to his right, being more versatile. But he's the type of player who needed the ball in his hands late in that game. And another thing I just thought of, why was Trevor Cooney taking that last shot? Yeah, I know Michael Carter-Williams and Brandon had fouled out, but the ball should have been inbounded to C.J. Fair and let him handle the game. You know, I would have stomached it more if he'd have taken that last shot and we would live and die with him. But the fact that Trevor Cooney took that last shot to win the game bothers me. It's going to bother me for the next tip-off for last year or the next year also.
Trevor had stated that the way that the play was drawn up, it was drawn up to go to James Sutherland. Mm-hmm. And when they couldn't get the ball to James, he said, I had to do something. So I don't think anybody's taking this harder than him. And the interesting thing that was said to me by a Syracuse fan after the fact is Trevor was beating the heck out of himself.
Yeah.
I mean, Trevor and I talked after the game. We've talked all season.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very open with me, and there's a mutual respect there, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he really just, you know, hanging his head. And he said, he's like, Coach Boeheim told me, I took the right shot.
Mm-hmm.
I did what I could. I made the right play. And still, you see that downtrodden. And what the fan had said to me after the game was, Cooney can't blame himself for one missed shot when Michael Carter fouls out, when Brandon Trish fouls out,
Definitely.
The decisions that were
Definitely.
Made,
Correct.
The fact that, you know, Sutherland 1 of 5 from 3,
Right.
you're not always going to have an on night. But when Sutherland attacks the rim and jams the ball down, he shows you, I have height,
yeah.
I can do this. So why keep taking threes if you could do that, affect the game, get fouled, go to the rim? Why didn't he do that sooner?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of questions you can ask, but that last shot is usually where a lot of people hold someone accountable, the only person accountable.
Yes.
So I thought it was interesting that a fan said to me, it wasn't about the last shot. It
no.
was about
oh, gosh,
the
no.
game.
I'm not holding a young man accountable for losing the game. I mean, I could, like you, as you just said, I could show you every intangible as to why they lost that game. I mean, and his defense also, even with him holding the ball in that situation, being a young player with all these other, you know, star players on the team, you know, they should have came and got the ball from him. It's not hard to run over to him and get the ball from him and run up a screen and run up a pick to get the ball from him. Don't leave the onus on him to sit back there and try to find a way to get them the ball so they can have an open shot. Come and get the ball from that young man, you know, and create your own shot. You know, you're the guys, you're the stars of the team. You're the ones that are on the floor of the team and they got Syracuse to this point. So the onus was on those guys who are on the floor also. You know, James Sutherland should have came and got the ball from Trevor Cooney. You know, you can run up a screen or you can run around him and walk over to him and run up, you know, have him pick for you as you get the ball. So I just, from the standpoint of looking at it, don't feel that in that situation, they put him in a situation where, you know, and let's be honest with ourselves, you know, Trevor Cooney's really, he's a perimeter player because he showed us that all year. You know, he's not the type of player, you know, he may improve that next year, who drives to the rim and can beat you off the dribble and get the ball and draw a foul. Didn't see that from him all year. Could he have done it in this game? Yes, he possibly could have. And then is that in his repertoire? Yes, it possibly is. But it's something we didn't see all year. So he was put in a situation that really wasn't fair for him. But the other players could have helped him out and bailed him out of that also.
And I give him credit, too, even though he missed the shot, for being able to put the shot up. He's a very strong kid.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to muscle that shot, watching it from behind, being where I was sitting by the court to see all the way down and watch him go down, see the man that was on him the entire time,
mm-hmm.
heavily defended, and to still be able to get the shot up without getting the shot blocked,
mm-hmm.
and without, you know, basically being taken down by the fact that the pressure was so high on him. I give him credit for getting the shot up in the first place, but you talk about James Sutherland going to get the ball. One thing that I see with him, and James is a person, love talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
Very respectful kid, always been good to me. As an impartial sportscaster, watching games,
mm-hmm.
strictly watching games. James is a senior. He doesn't have another shot to come back.
No, he does not.
So it's try to play pro or do something else.
Right.
To me, he is still in this moment, and granted, he's only been really playing for the last 2 years, he's not as tenacious or as strong as he needs to be. I think he plays soft sometimes.
Yes, he does play soft. He's as I say, he's a perimeter player. Yes, he can jump. He's athletic. He can dunk when he needs to. I mean, as evident by the one play where he had that one tomahawk one hand dunk at the game with Syracuse momentum coming back. But he needs to be a more aggressive, a more tenacious, a more attitude player. He's not an attitude player at all. You know, he loves to come off screens and shoots the three. I mean, he's helping on shooting threes. He's good at it. He's great at it. You know, but the game is more than just shooting threes. I mean, you look at a player like a LeBron James who can get to the rim whenever he needs a foul or gets a point. You know, you look at someone like a Kobe Bryant that can get to the rim and get a foul whenever he needs points. You look at someone like, I even use Blake Griffin, who's like that attitude player to go out there and they grit their teeth and they get it done. That's not James Sutherland. And for him to be successful going out to the next level, he's going to have to find that what we call dog, or that bite, or that anger, or that, you know, that ferociousness inside of him to be able to play at the next level, because that's what it's going to take.
He can make threes, but when he's fronted, when he's double-teamed, when there's people on him, there is that shakiness.
Yes.
You know, and I think that that's something that, well, I know that that's something that you can't have in the NBA.
No.
Because you're naming LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Blake Griffin, all similar heights.
Oh, yes.
To James Sutherland.
Yes.
And it's not that James Sutherland doesn't have strength, and it's not that he can't attack the rim, as we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's that in order to attack the rim, 9 times out of 10, he wants a clear path.
Yes.
In order to shoot a 3, 9 times out of 10, he wants a clear path. And no one in the NBA is going to give you a clear path.
I mean, in the mindset of having played 15 years professionally myself, my mindset in a game was whenever I would go into a game, I would find out who my matchup was a linebacker, whether it be lineman, or whether it be the entire defense. My first thought would be like, this is going to be a physical game. You know, because, you know, physicality, I love physicality, but it's like you always said to yourself, I'm going to be sore after this game because these guys are tough. I guarantee you, there's not one person that James Sutherland ever played against that said that to about. I'm going to get bodied down below. You know, I'm going to get beat up because this guy's physical. He likes to, you know, he likes to work. He likes to, you know, get on you. He likes to do all these things. James Sutherland wants to come off the screen and shoot a three. And like as you said before, and if he has a wide open lane down, you know, down, or if he has a wide open shot down the lane, he's going to try and dunk it. But if it's crowded in there, what's he going to do? Shoot the three. Become physical, young man. Let these people know that you will drive down the lane and take, or you know, and draw a charge, you know, or whatever it is you do, you need to do to get it done. But you know, these guys need to know that you're serious and that you're a physical player. Now that'll open up the 3 points even that much more, and that would improve your game even that much more. But he has to get that mindset and he has to want it for himself.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Chris Joseph has talent, and we've seen that talent. But just there was nothing, kind of like a gray cloud.
Yes.
I compare that to, if that makes sense, to look at someone like Chris and say, okay, sometimes Chris can make a three.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, James is better at making threes.
Mm-hmm.
James is better on the jump shot. But Chris had his moments. He had his days. He had the same type of averages, 13, 14 points a game. But Chris Joseph was just too much of this gray cloud.
He was finesse. I mean,
it was just there, and that was it. And James has shown in this later part of the season, when you go 7-2 in the postseason between the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament, they went 7-2 not because he shot threes.
Yes.
Because he shot threes, because other things happened on the defense,
right.
But that defense got better because James Sutherland decided to play defense. 6'8",
mm-hmm.
Never really got involved in the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Down low, on a wing, putting him on the defense at 6'8 to play that defense and
mm-hmm.
him actually care about that. They say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You talk about having the dog.
Yes.
He had bark on the defense.
Yes.
And I think that in history, it needs to be stated, yeah, there was 19 threes in the Big East tournament, but if that dog didn't bark on defense,
yes.
then they would have been in the doghouse. They would not have been in the tournament going anywhere.
Well, I completely agree. You know, it just seems that they've ramped up everything on defense, you know, starting with the Big East tournament after what Louisville did to him, you know. But it was fun to watch. You know, it's just... I always say I always judge an athlete not by, you know, skill set. Skill set is one aspect of judging an athlete, you know. And it's just like, all right, you walk onto a field or you walk into a fight. Or you're sitting at a bar. You sit over there and look at a bunch of guys, and then you can go through all the guys, you know. There's one guy you always look at. You be like, you know, I really wouldn't want to meet that guy in the dark alley, you know. And that's the kind of person you have to be as a basketball player or a football player, whatever it may be. You know, if you can get a command and respect of a guy walking to a court and looking at you, being like, this is going to be a tough game. Not because this person is talented, but because this person is physical and this person is going to come at me 100 miles an hour every single play. That's when you earn your respect, and that's when you become a much better, more efficient player.
Looking at being an efficient player and being that player that other people need to fear.
Mm-hmm.
Spring game's coming up. getting back on the field, April 20th, orange and blue. What does it mean to you to see this spring game, to be an alum and see this? Because, you know, these are special games, and they have to have a special meaning to you when you see the orange and blue up again, go up against each other. You know, some nostalgia there of going back and knowing going up against your own teammates.
Yeah, for me personally, when I go up there and see the spring game and I take my sons, you know, it's just, it's history. You know, it's just, I mean, a long time ago, you know, I was out there doing the exact same thing myself, you know, and it's just to see these young kids out there flying around, having fun, getting them a spring game, you know, and I reminisce from when I was actually going to the spring games and how much fun we had, the camaraderie, you know, with my teammates, the guy, you know, all the guys who were coming up, you know, and this is the same thing we used to do. Go out there, have the spring game, and when the spring game was over, go back to Skytop Apartments. You know, our parents are here. Our parents had a cookout on us for everything. Then our parents relaxed. You know, we ended up going down to Marshall Street, hanging out, because spring game was over. We did put in all that hard work to prepare ourselves going into the next season, and it's just like, you know, it's life. You know, and it's just so fun for me to watch these young guys doing the exact same thing that I was privileged to do, you know, not too many years ago, you know. So it's always fun. It's always interesting. It's always a great get-together where all the old guys come back. You know, we reminisce about the things we do, you know, and it just reminds us that the special bond and the special, you know, camaraderie that we had, because not many people get a chance to do that. You know, getting a Division I scholarship is something that's few and far between a lot of athletes. You know, yes, we sit here and watch all these athletes on television running around who have D1 scholarship to play football and things of that nature. But when you look at the mass of the population we have there, we're such a small percentage. You know, it's such a small percentage of athletes that are able to get a Division I scholarship to play football. So, you know, I tell those young men, cherish the moments, because, you know, they'll stay with you a lifetime, you know, because they stay with me and my friends a lifetime also.
After the spring game, as a football player, when you have that break until fall practice, what is life like, you know, going back to your time there? What was life like for you in that summer area where you come off your spring game, you have fall practice in the distance, that whole middle area? I mean, is that because you go from I'm back on the field, mm-hmm. finally, mm-hmm. to I'm off the field, to I'm getting ready for the season? What is that middle time like?
I mean, for about a month or two, it's just a mental relaxation period is the best way I can describe it. Granted, we're still running, we're still keeping our body in shape, you know, we're still lifting weights and doing everything it takes to get, you know, to stay, you know, a highly functional athlete, you know, but it's just a mental break. You don't have to worry about catching passes, you don't have to worry about reading holes, you don't have to worry about watching film, you don't have to worry about, you know, being required to be somewhere 24 hours a day, as it seemed like during football season. You know, you can just take a break and just be yourself and go out there and be, you know, an 18, a 19, a 20, 21-year-old young adolescent, you know? Because, honestly, during the football season, everything's so hectic. You got to worry about the game film. You got to worry about getting into practice. You got to worry about making the blocks. You got to worry about making plays. You got to worry about all the coaches in your area. You got to worry about your teammates telling you what to do. So it's a hectic time. So when you finally get a chance to take a deep breath and get a chance to relax, you cherish those moments. But, you know, the one thing I always say, I used to sit there and love working out during that time, because it was my time away from everything. You know, it's just a time to just be myself. You know, you can just sit back and you reflect, but it doesn't last long, because boom, before you know it, it's back to football mode again.
And it's hard to believe that it feels like we just got into 2013, yeah. Yet that ACC season, yeah, is right there, yeah, in our faces.
It's on the horizon.
The quarterback battle. You were, mm-hmm, running back in your time, but obviously you know the importance of having a good quarterback. Right. You had McPherson. Mm-hmm. How excited are you to go into this spring game and see the three guys that have been working to get this ready, Charlie Loeb, Terrell Hunt, and John Kinder? Mm-hmm. Do you have that excitement in yourself, even though you're not a player on the, mm-hmm, field for them? Are you excited about this? Because, I mean, I have to be honest, my entire time covering Syracuse, there was a quarterback.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, for me, I'm ecstatic about this, because it's kind of like going to NFL training camp.
Yeah.
You get to see these battles that usually are reserved for the certain teams like Kansas City or Cleveland, yeah, that are looking for a quarterback. So what are your thoughts on the fact, you know, your feelings on the fact that you're walking into a spring game and it's not the ones versus the twos, it's the one versus the potential, yeah, one versus, yeah, the potential one. So,
you know, I look at it now and I just say to myself, it's about the competition. You know, granted, these are your teammates, you know, these are your friends. know, off the field, these are guys you hang out with, you know. But the simple fact that the competition brings out the best in each athlete makes you that much a better athlete, you know. At any given point, if you go out there and you beat me as an athlete, I'm still going to be your friends. But, I mean, you just work that much harder. But it teaches me that maybe I have to work that much harder to get in front of you. So the competition to watch amongst these athletes is a great thing because, yes, they're fierce. Yes, they're going at each other 100 miles an hour. But you know what? They're the best of friends. Everyone should always say the same thing about me and Michael Owens. You know, the running back battle when I was at Syracuse. You know, here we have two great guys who are two great friends, you know, battling for one spot. But it's like, you know, it was never me against Michael Owens. I just went out there and just did the best job I possibly could. Michael Owens just went out there and did the best job he possibly could. And the coaches decided who was going to start and who wasn't. But you know what? At the end of the day, when we walked off that field, even when we were on that field, we were the best of friends. You know, during the game, I'd be looking at the game and he would laugh because, you know, I made a mistake. Same thing with me. During the game, I would look at him and laugh because I knew he made a mistake. But it didn't take away from, you know, I'm trying to outdo you. You're trying to outdo me. We're just trying to do the best we possibly can. And that's the one thing I look at these young athletes. They go out there and they just do the best job they possibly can. They're not trying to defeat their teammate. They're just trying to do the best job they possibly can for themselves. If the coaches deem that it's good enough for them to start, so be it. And the other guy can look at it and be like, yes, I would like to start. But my good friend who went out there and tried harder than me, you know, got the starting nod. Is that going to stop me from working hard? No, it's not. I'm going to keep working hard and I'm going to cheer him on. The simple fact that you can see someone, you know, do better than you and get the starting job, but yet still cheer him on, says a lot about a young man.
And I think that that's something that we can see in Jerome Smith and Prince Tyson Gully. I don't know if you look across the country how many relationships seem to be so well put together.
Yes.
And I know that there's programs that, you know, regarded as bigger, at least in the here and now. And, you know, when you think about the best programs in the 21st century, people are going to say Ohio State. They're going to say USC. They're going to say teams like Florida and whatnot, Texas, but in Alabama. But when you look at Syracuse, Jerome improved his game.
Correct.
Because he had to sit and wait.
Yep.
Prince Tyson Gully improved his game because he had to sit and wait. In 2010 at the Pinstripe Bowl, they were both waiting.
Correct.
And now they're playing in the Pinstripe Bowl. They're affecting the Pinstripe Bowl. And these two guys will tell you, well, I'm better than Jerome in this respect. Well, I'm better than Prince in this respect. But they never disrespect each other on the field.
Me and Michael Owens were the same way. You know what? Honestly, it's just we made each other better. We completely made each other better. I mean, I know what his weaknesses were. I mean, he'd tell you the exact same thing. He knew what my weaknesses were. You know, and he would tell you the exact same thing. You know, Daryl Johnson, the same way, our fullback. You know, we understood each other. We were a close-knit group. You know, because we were splitting time, because we were battling for the starting position, that didn't matter. We were good friends, you know, and we went out there and we played that way. We played hard. I was his biggest cheerleader out there during the game, and he was my biggest cheerleader, you know. That's what sports and that's what camaraderie, and that's what being teammates is about.
You had touched on something that I've believed really throughout my life, in that if you do the best you can, that's all you can do.
That's all you can expect yourself to do.
And I've always lived by something that I read. Well, I can't say always. I live by it since I read it. But it was in my planner as a kid. They give you like high school planners, whatever. And there was a quote in there. It said, never compare yourself to someone else because you will either become depressed that you're not as good or you'll become cocky that you're better than some. And so I never compete with anybody but myself.
Yes.
You touched on that with yourself and Michael Owens, that you guys never competed with anyone but yourself.
No.
How important is it for you to compete with yourself instead of competing with the person to your left or right?
It's, you know, I never worried about that. You know, maybe it's because of the lesson I learned from college, like you said. You know, when I was out there, my competition was never to be better than Michael Owens. My competition every day when I walked in the practice field was, Robert, just go out there, you know, and just do the best job you possibly can within yourself. You know what? You know how hard you train. You know how hard you work. You know how hard you prepare for this. Just go out there and do the things you need to do. Michael was going to do what he needed to do. You know, it's the coach's decision. They have to decide to deem me better, that I'm going to start better for what I did, for what it's worth, then I'm going to start. But that's not my decision. All I can do is go out there and work as hard as I possibly can with the tools that God's given me. You know, and that's all I did every day. And Michael was the same way. There was never a competition between either of us, no matter what. You could tell by that. I mean, we were roommates on road games. They wouldn't let us room together, you know, during the year because they're like, nah, that's too much trouble because we got along so well. But it's like, you know, we are the best of friends. You know, I talked to him the other day. You know, he's coming up for the spring game and everything. And to this day, we're still, you know, still the best of friends, you know. So the competition, I think, just both made us realize that, you know, with hard work, a lot of things happen, you know. But with hard work within yourself, you can make others around you that much better. And as I said before, Michael Owens made me a lot better running back, and I know I made Michael Owens a lot better running back. And Daryl Johnson can also be included in that group, because the three of us in that backfield doing the things we did at Syracuse, you know, we made each other better because we believed in each other. You know, we pushed each other, and we got the best of our ability out of all of us.
Potentially, Jerome Smith, Prince Tyson Gully, Adonis Moore being a bigger guy, maybe they're two running back, fullback type of look like you had.
You know, I see the exact same, you know, dichotomy in those young men that me, Daryl, and Mo had, or Michael Owens, how you call him, Mo.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, and a nice parallel there, because something that I thought about, but something that you can see as a player, I think means a lot. Rob Drummond, NFL, CFL, and Syracuse alum here on Back on the Field, only on Back on the Field. Wake up call, DT.com. You're here with Dan Tatora, and we will talk next week, and we'll also talk after that spring game and get thoughts from Rob and from what you've seen, and we'll get my thoughts as well. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.